Today is July 8th, 2015, and this is episode number 314 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I am Brian Chaffin, and I hate train noise. Not all train noise. Not all train noise is created equal. Today, I hate droney engines running across the street from me for hours on end. So that they, like, make my podcast sound noisy. Hate it. Hate it.
Man, this is going to be a really big business card.
Yeah, really, really, really is. See, if you want to comment on a question, anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. And to get the full story, you can check out the liner notes. What do we call them? They're not liner notes. What are they called?
Show notes.
Show notes. Show notes over at macobserver.com/ACM. We are professionals.
That's right. Top men.
We're top men. We are top men.
Hey, I think we could shorten your business card title to Mr. Cranky Pants.
Mr. Cranky. I'm Brian Chaffin, Mr. Cranky Pants.
That flows really well.
Yeah, it's really cool, though. There's a train that's, like, becoming a lot louder. I don't know why.
See, I think there's a train party happening. And I also think that that the internet service provider on your side of the glass mm-hmm. has switched over to using trains for data packet switching.
That would so explain it.
Right. So they're actually stacking up the trains so that they can handle all the bandwidth that's necessary to make a show like this happen.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Or something.
And there's people out there listening right now and they're just shaking their heads.
So the problem, I hate noisy podcasts. I don't like having noise in my podcast. I mean, we go to great lengths to present to you, dear listener, high quality audio recording for our podcast. We go to greater lengths than most folk go to.
That's true.
Definitely obsessive.
Well, does it help to know that the audio quality of the train background noise that you provide is of superior quality to what anyone else would offer on a podcast?
Yeah, a little bit. And the ironic thing is that train just left, so now all the stuff that I was complaining about is moot and irrelevant.
Yes, but you got it out of your system. Don't you feel better?
No, I don't, because I'm Mr. Cranky Pants. So,
oh, that's right.
Let's talk about, while we still have some listeners.
What? Let's talk with both of our listeners.
Let's talk about Apple Watch. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of people getting all hot and bothered about what Apple Watch sale numbers may or may not be.
Well, I'm one of them.
Yes, you are. But in your defense, you have presented what I feel is a more level-headed argument about what you think is happening, whereas I'm seeing a lot of other people just throwing out emotional arguments.
Well, you know, I have to differ with you there. I don't know that I've particularly thrown out a well-reasoned argument. I'm just pointing out that there's a problem. I don't know why there's... All right, so let's start over.
Okay.
Let's back up.
Right. Okay.
So Apple Watch sales apparently have taken a pretty sharp decline. Now, we don't know this from Apple. We know this instead from Slice Intelligence.
Okay, so why should I believe anything that Slice Intelligence tosses out for me?
Well, maybe you shouldn't.
Maybe I shouldn't, but...
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. So, I mean, Slice Intelligence is one of these companies that, you know, mines data so that they can sell it to people.
Right. But it's the way they mine data that adds some credibility to the figures they're tossing around for Apple Watch sales.
Yeah, some. All right, so... What they do, they offer two services. One is called, I'm looking for the name of it. I find it so completely abhorrent. I just kind of blocked it from my mind. the Slice shopping utility, which, quote, allows shoppers to organize, track, and manage their online purchases, which really means it allows Slice to mine your data. I don't recommend becoming a part of this. I'm going to be honest. I don't like this stuff.
But the fact that a lot of people have signed up for this makes it easier for us to get some data.
Right. And then the other thing that they have is something called Unroll.me. And that is some sort of service that, quote, reduces inbox clutter, which again just means that they get to mine it. It's like Google. You know, it's like Gmail. Everything that you do with Gmail, Google snoops through so that it can add that information to your profile so that they can sell advertising.
Okay. And in this case, what Slice is aggregating and then selling is data about your purchase habits.
Yeah. They're very particularly looking for receipts. They're looking for data that indicates on purchases and not just online purchases. They're actually looking for any kind of emailed receipt, which, you know, doesn't always include, it isn't just limited to online purchases, but whatever. And they then take this data, and being the Stanford mathematician brainiacs that they are, or that the founders are at least, they then try to project, you know, sales trends, sales of particular devices like, you know, smartwatches or, you know, individual brands like Apple's iPad or whatever. And in this particular case, they released, they have a new study.
Right. New study.
They have a new study. I'm deleting, what our listeners may not realize is I'm deleting coughs on my end. I have a cold.
And you're such a trooper because you're still here recording.
Well, yeah, if I was a real trooper, I wouldn't have mentioned it, but whatever. You know, that's just nitpicking. They released this some data showing that Apple Watch sales are slowing. And going back to Apple Watch launch date, the device launched with like 200,000 sales per day for, I think, like the first week or something. And then dropped off precipitously to about 20,000 units a day, and then fell to less than 10,000 per day. Don't know this specific number, but it's less than 10,000 per day. And you can see in this chart that they put out, you can see the sharp decline. And as John Martellaro pointed out to me, this is a log scale chart. If it was a linear chart, the drop off in sales would actually look more precipitous.
You know, the fact that John can look at a chart and tell you if it's linear or log is actually pretty cool.
It's labeled log scale.
Nonetheless, he understands what that means.
Yeah, he understands what that means because he's Mr. Smarty Pants and I'm not. And I just, you know, I'm looking at this chart and I'm thinking there's something wrong. So, okay, because these numbers don't come from Apple, you know, maybe you shouldn't listen to them. But the art of projecting total results from a subset of data is decades old, if not older.
Sure.
And my guess is there's at least some fire behind the smoke, and it's probably pretty legit. The very least thing you can say is that demand in the subset of users, the subset of the world that actually uses this company's utilities, demand within that subset has fallen off precipitously. That's the very least thing you could say. And it's really interesting. You know, people, Apple fans, our readers, John, Kelly, leaped to
Apple's defense.
To Apple's defense, saying that, you know, well, it's this or that. And I don't think you should.
All right. So what I'm getting out of all this is that people are speculating why these numbers are dropping off for Apple Watch sales. And there's a lot of people that are defending the numbers without having real data to back it up. Is that where you're going with this?
You know, like, well, you know, who uses this, or, you know, these numbers are just the subset of idiots that would use this company's services, and, you know, all this stuff. That's irrelevant. I mean, the fact of the matter is their job is to come up with data based on the subset of information that they have. And there's probably something to it.
Yeah, and Slice has a track record of being able to reasonably accurately ferret out real trends from the data they're collecting.
Do you know that for a fact?
I know that that previous data sets that they have published like this
mm-hmm.
have been relatively in line with actual sales. So while I don't have any factual data to say that this information is correct, I can say that by and large, Slice has offered up reasonable information in the past.
Okay. I'll buy that.
All right, there you go.
And here's the deal. I don't know whether it's marketing or whether it's the product, but this is what we do know. There's something about Apple Watch that is, at the very least, not selling itself.
Now,
that's the one thing. I think that's the one thing that stands pretty self-evident.
Yes, and the big question I have is, how do these Apple Watch sales figures match up with other smartwatch sales?
There's no doubt that Apple Watch is still outselling the competition. I don't think that's not really the point, though. I mean, that's not where Apple the success of Apple Watch should not be compared to other smartwatches other than from a, you know, LOL other smartwatches standpoint.
Sure.
I mean, Apple's bar is just higher than everybody else's bar.
So are these numbers in line with what Apple's expecting to sell, or is Apple coming in below its own sales figures?
We don't know where Apple's numbers are, and that's one reason why I'm so willing to believe what Slice is telling us, because Apple hasn't said word one about Apple Watch sales other than to say everything is going great.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had Apple not tell us what a new product is doing.
Yet, certainly not like this. Apple is usually more forthcoming with data.
Yeah, because, you know, they want to be able to brag about it, because most Apple products release with a bang. Right? You know, there's huge numbers, and Apple wants everybody to know. And right. The fact that Apple, and this is, Apple Watch is particularly important. This is the first device developed and released without Steve Jobs' involvement. And
right.
I mean, I remember the way Tim Cook raised his arm in triumph at the September debut of this thing. And it was just like, it was such a we did it moment. And I don't think this is about patting themselves on the back for making a great product. I think this is my personal interpretation of Apple Watch and the Apple executives pushing this device is, we need to show the world that Steve built a company that can outlast Steve. And part of that's based on Steve being proud of the fact that he did just that. He told Walter Isaacson that the product he is most proud of having built in his life is Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And
understandable.
And that he had put a lot of effort, essentially in the last years of his life, into making sure that the culture of innovation that he had fostered would be institutionalized and would continue without him. And I think that all of the people that he had working for him, that one of the things that drives them today is not their personal glory so much as it demonstrating that Steve actually did that. I think they want to be successful. I think they want Apple to be successful for Steve.
All right. Sure, I can see that.
I don't have any evidence in any of those, by the way. It's all, you know, gut instincts and feelings on you know, my own intuition. But
fair, people tune in to get our gut instincts.
I know, right? It's crazy.
I know.
So, that makes Apple Watch important, and that makes the success of Apple Watch important. You know, Apple really thought differently with this product. You know, it's the Apple Watch Edition, which Slice, I didn't put this in the article. Slice estimates that fewer than 10,000 Apple Watch Editions. This is the gold one, the one that starts at $10,000. Mm-hmm. Fewer than 10,000 of those have been sold in the U.S. I have no idea how many Apple intended to sell.
My guess is Apple didn't intend to sell very many of the edition models.
Yeah, but very many. What is very many? Is very many 100,000, 10,000, 5,000, 1,000, a million? We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. My guess is a million is way over what they expected, and that the number probably falls somewhere between 10,000 and 100,000, which I know is a wide range, but the point is, in the grand scheme of Apple product sales, that's not very many.
No, and I mean, and it pays to remember that the point of Apple Watch Edition is not to sell great numbers. It is instead to sell to the tastemakers and trend makers.
Right. It's a reminder to the world that Apple is in the fashion industry now.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's to help make Apple Watch a fashion item and not a fitness gadget. Right? I mean, the Apple Watch Edition has a very specific role to play, and it doesn't need to sell a bazillion units to fulfill that role. But again, we don't know what Apple's goals were. And that 10,000 unit number is for the U.S. I have no doubt that Apple anticipated selling many of its Apple Watch Editions in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And in possibly in the Middle East and possibly in Europe.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if international Apple Watch Edition sales are higher than the sales inside the United States.
I totally agree. Totally agree. But we don't know because Apple won't tell us. And the fact that Apple doesn't tell us, to me, says that Apple's not proud of those numbers. I think if Apple was proud of those numbers, they'd be telling us. And that's the thing. That's why when I look at this drop off in sales from Slice,
now I'm interrupting you for a second just because I have a couple ideas.
And I have a cough.
Oh, that too. I think that Apple went into Apple Watch sales already up against the wall. This was not a product launch that went smoothly for them. I mean, they had what looks like serious production issues because suppliers couldn't get them the parts they needed. And so when they finally did launch, it was very limited inventory. People were having a horrible time getting one. Many people went weeks. Some people still haven't gotten their Apple Watch that they ordered early. And I think that Apple was in a position where they couldn't sell very many. Just no matter what they did with this launch, they simply could not sell very many.
Well, yeah, and that's actually one of the sort of defenses I saw out on the interwebs.
Now, I'm not saying that as a defense.
I know you're not.
Just an observation.
That's why I specified that I saw that out on the interwebs, that you know, that Apple has had problems selling this thing because its launch was flawed. Here's the deal. Apple has had flawed launches for a lot of its products. And
yeah, that's true.
At the very least, demand has outstripped supply on many of its new products, many new iPads, many new iPhones, some cases even Macs. And demand has always increased in the wake of those supply problems. What we're seeing right now is we're actually seeing sales decline, according to Slice's data. And that's as availability is improving.
Yeah. Okay. So that tells me that people that were really interested in buying an Apple Watch got one. And then that was it.
Right. Which has always been the case for Apple products. The people that stay up and order stuff at midnight are always the biggest fans.
Right.
But what happens is that they talk about their thing. And this is actually part of my thesis. Now, John Martellaro, my buddy John Martellaro, we're going to talk about this on Thursday's Daily Observations.
Yes, we are.
He wants to blame it all on marketing. He's saying that Apple is missing the boat. Apple, you know, was pushing this thing when it was hard to get. And now that it's not hard to get, Apple isn't pushing it, and that doesn't make any sense. Now, that may or may not be true. It is true. But I don't think that's the problem. I think that the real problem here is that Apple Watch isn't quite resonating with me.
You know, I'm wondering if you may be right based on anecdotal personal evidence, meaning I have talked with several people that have seen I'm wearing an Apple Watch and they want to know about it. They don't have one and they want to know why I like it. And what I tell them is that as a fitness tracker for me, it's just kind of okay. I mean, it does what it does just fine, but it's not something that's replacing my Fitbit yet. And what I tell people is that this is a device that has become incredibly useful as a satellite tool to go with my iPhone. So I have specific alerts coming to my watch that are more critical, and then less critical alerts showing up just on the iPhone. And that way I have this very subtle thing letting me know when it is that I need to check a message. If it's on my wrist, I need to look at it sooner. If it's in my pocket, I can look at it whenever. And when I explain that to people, and I don't even get any farther into explaining how I'm using the Apple Watch, more often than not, people say that I have given them the first compelling example of why they would want an Apple Watch.
Well, and you know, I use it. This is what I said in my piece. I like my Apple Watch, but I don't know that I love it. I definitely like it, but I don't know that I love it. And in fact, I have been wanting more and more and more to wear my mechanical watch again.
Oh, that's interesting.
I miss my mechanical watch. And as of this second, if I could get a strap, a smart strap, that measured everything that my Apple Watch measured, I would probably wear my mechanical watch out at least 50% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Still wouldn't wear it in the house. I wear my Apple Watch in the house, and I never wore my mechanical watch in the house.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, it's because I want the data, and I climb sure. up and downstairs, and you know, I want my steps, and I want the reminders to get off my fat butt every hour.
So that's I find that interesting because I've known for a long time you do not wear a watch in your house.
Right.
So the fact that you want the data that Apple Watch gives you enough to wear your watch inside, well, that's a very interesting data point. Now, I found for me, my Apple Watch stays on the charger until I either need to get something from it, like a screenshot for an article, or I'm leaving my place. And when I leave my place, I want to have the watch on. So my watch sometimes will stay sitting on the charger until afternoon, but then I put it on and it stays on for the rest of the day.
Yeah, but you're carrying around like Fitbit and stuff with you the whole time, right?
Yes, but my Fitbit, you're right, is with me all the time. I sleep with my Fitbit on so I can do my sleep tracking, and then it's just with me all the time, all day long.
When do you charge it, by the way?
I will charge my Fitbit typically on a Monday morning, and I do that when I'm sitting at my desk working on articles because I'm not actually going anywhere, and it charges fairly quickly, so it can typically charge up fully while I'm sitting at my desk, so I lose no steps off of its count or very few steps.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but Apple Watch, if I take it off, I mean, that's it. It's done until I need to put it back on for something.
All right, that also makes sense. So I use mine for time. I do look at it for time. I don't pull my watch out. I don't pull my phone out for the time anymore.
Uh-huh.
I use it for tracking. I don't have another fitness tracker. And right. I use it to triage my notifications, which is similar to what you said. I mean, it's fantastic. You know, I had a friend of mine say to me that she was concerned about getting an Apple Watch because she didn't want to become more plugged in. She already felt she was too plugged in.
Uh-huh.
And that made me think about about myself and my own uses. And I realized that my Apple Watch was helping me be less plugged in because I do use it to triage all my notifications.
Yep, so do I.
You know, I get a text, I look and see who it's from. Can that wait? Well, a lot of my texts can wait, and some cannot. I get a notification from Twitter. Is it something that can wait? More often than not, but now I don't have to look at the details.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, especially with text, just being able to see who a message is from immediately allows me to understand whether or not I need to read it right now or it can wait.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And I like that. I feel like I am less tethered to my iPhone than I previously was, simply because I have that nice little touch tap thing happening on my wrist that's totally unobtrusive, and it just lets me know if I need to look now or soon, as opposed to whenever.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I also use it for a lot of replying to texts, both with the dictation mode and sending back the quick messages that are automatic.
Yes. Yes. I do that too.
And sending back emojis.
Yes, I do that a lot too. And now the argument people toss back at me when I say I do that, they're like, well, now your messages aren't private because you're just announcing them to everyone. And I'm like, wait a second. I do not have to do every single response by speaking into my watch. If it's going to be something that's obtrusive or disturbing to everyone around me, or if it's something that I want to keep more private, of course I'm pulling out my iPhone.
Exactly. Likewise.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are stuck in the notion that this is a binary thing where you're using the watch. Okay, that's it. That's all you can use now. And I'm wondering, as I say this, is this a problem with the message that Apple is giving us? Or is this a problem with the way we are using the devices and the way it's designed?
Well, probably. I mean, you know, it's certainly a marketing problem for Apple. Oh, I also use it for Apple Pay.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. But those are all a subset of things that the Apple Watch can do. I get the weather from it too. Actually, I do that.
Uh-huh.
But the Apple Watch will do a lot more, and those lot more things have not really become a part of my life.
Yeah, I'm with you. I use a very focused subset of features on the Apple Watch every day.
Yeah, likewise. And to me, what I think this means, or what this has resulted in, is people aren't going, oh my God, you have to have one of these. Apple is not creating evangelists with this product. And I know that Apple is is turned away from the term evangelist since Steve Jobs came back. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest. We've all been iPhone evangelists, and yes, many of us have been iPad evangelists, and the vast majority of us have been Mac evangelists.
Mm-hmm.
right? You know, we talk about how great these devices are, how wonderful the experience is, and how much we like having in our life. I don't really think people are talking about the Apple Watch that way, and I think that that is in part because this device is not, it's just not, it's not lighting people up. It's not delighting enough people.
Do you think that could change when watchOS 2 comes out this fall?
Maybe. And I think it's more likely to change with the next Apple Watch.
Yep. My guess is that Apple is already working on significant changes, regardless of how many of those changes actually show up in the next watch. But Apple's working on significant changes right now based on what they're seeing from user feedback.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I kind of think that Apple's actually going to introduce a new model this fall for Christmas, despite the fact that it's less than a year.
I would be very surprised, but this wouldn't be the first time Apple has done something where I'm like, oh, that's not going to happen. As a matter of fact, because I would be surprised that it's happening, you can probably go to the bank with this one. Apple is going to release a new version of Apple Watch this fall.
It's probably true. And I would like to note that you also said that Apple wouldn't release a watch. Just saying.
And here I am with one on my wrist right now.
So.
Hey, at least I'm not afraid to toss out my ideas.
Yeah, you have that going for you.
Yeah. Hey, I have to take it as I can get it, okay?
So, on the one hand, Apple is definitely not marketing this thing well. And in some ways, it's not marketing at all. I mean, we did have some Apple Watch ads, but I'm not seeing them right now. Like, recently, I've seen the iPhone 6 shot with an iPhone 6 ads.
Now, I'm seeing Apple Watch commercials on television. And I know I have to qualify this because it's no secret that I don't have regular television. So right. For me to see a commercial, it means I'm someplace where I can see a commercial.
Right.
There's a bar about a block away from me, and I love their bison burgers. So I'll go in and sit at the bar and have something to eat and drink. And or maybe a little more to drink, who knows? But the real point is that there's a big screen TV on the wall back behind the bar, and they are routinely playing like a sports channel or something. And I have quite regularly seen Apple Watch commercials on whatever satellite television sports channel they happen to be playing.
Okay, good to know.
So, yeah, so I'm seeing those. It's not like every commercial break, but it's often enough that I notice that I'm seeing Apple Watch commercials.
Okay, again, fair enough. So then that comes down to the fact that Apple isn't really marketing these things very well. But I really do think that it comes down to more of an issue that the product itself isn't delighting folks. And if it was delighting folks, we wouldn't be seeing a precipitous sales drop-off.
Yet, if people aren't seeing a compelling reason why they need to buy one, and that compelling reason can be as simple as it is so cool,
yeah,
then there's something wrong, and I don't know if that's the message or if it's the product design.
And I don't know that either. I do not know the answer to that. But I do. I think that Apple has got. I don't want to say Apple has a problem on its hand. This product isn't where it needs to be yet in terms of both marketing and overall development. And, you know, as I put in the piece, the proof of that is in these sales numbers that are coming from Slice.
Now, I don't think Apple's going to stop making Apple Watches.
No,
they're in this for the long haul, and they clearly want to have, a place in the fashion wearables technology world. So they're working on that. This is just their first step.
Yeah, these executives are still driven to prove to the world that they can do this with us. You know, that's actually, boy, I should have said this earlier. So I was talking about how to prove to the world that Steve did it.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that particular coin is I think they are also keen on proving to the world that they can do it without Steve. You know, it's like very much two sides of the same coin. And that, I mean, that remains. That is a fact. This is the product for Tim Cook and all these other executives to prove that they can do it and that they have done it. And that I think that they are smart enough. You know, Apple has shown this executive team has shown that they can turn on a dime and change direction as needed. And I think that they're going to get Apple Watch right. I just don't think Apple Watch is right yet, despite the fact that I love mine. I like mine.
All right, there you go. And I'm going to hold up Apple TV as a perfect example of Apple sticking it out, because they released Apple TV and it's never been a big seller, but it's still here.
Yeah, there's a difference though with Apple TV.
Oh yeah. Well, yes, there's a significant difference, but the similarity is Apple has a master plan that they're willing to work through over time.
Well, you know, it's funny. Apple TV is a great counterexample. Apple TV is so the difference between Apple TV and Apple Watch is that Apple TV has always been a sort of half-assed hobby, as Tim Cook calls it.
Not anymore. They don't call it a hobby anymore. But they did for a very long time.
For a very, very long time.
Yes.
And that product, despite always having been this quote-unquote hobby and always been sort of this, you know, this half-hearted effort to become the set-top box for the rest of us. Sales for this device have only increased over time.
All right, that's a really good point. Now, to be fair, we only have a couple months worth of data for Apple Watch sales, so we may see that the long-term trend is that Apple Watch does increase in numbers over time.
Yeah, it's true. Well, yeah, it's true. This may be some sort of weird, freakish blip. I doubt it, though. Throw enough numbers at something and the truth will out.
Yes. Yeah.
I know. So we will have to see where this goes. I guess it's just interesting to me that I've arrived at this conclusion that Apple isn't, that Apple Watch just isn't quite where it needs to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's also pretty cool that you're able to look at products that Apple makes and come to a conclusion like you have that isn't an Apple fanboy response.
Yeah, I left my fanboyness a long time ago, man. When Apple kicked Wiley out of the Apple stores because they wouldn't not publish Icon, which is an unauthorized biography of Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went after journalist sources with Think Secret.
Yes, I remember that too.
And when they stole the Watson concept.
Oh, right. Yes, when they made Sherlock. Or Spotlight. Or whatever call it. Right,
Sherlock now. And when they basically added Watson's functionality into Sherlock. All of those. And there were a couple of other utilities. You know, Apple once upon a time, when they wanted to add something to OS X, they'd actually buy the utility from the developer.
Yeah.
And then under Steve, they sort of didn't. And when I say sort of, they did not do that. And all three of those things kind of happened in quick succession, and that essentially I shed my fanboyness at that point. For what it's worth.
Yeah, unfortunate that it had to be something like that made you shed your fanboyness. But then again, I suppose that's probably the sort of thing that it was going to take.
Yeah, probably.
So there you go.
Probably, and that was more than a decade ago. I think it was like 2003. Yeah.
Now, I'm glad also that you and John both agreed to come on Daily Observations tomorrow and go head to head with your opposing views on what's behind the lower Apple Watch sales.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to asking him why he's so willing to make excuses for Apple. That's I'm gonna watch him squirm on the end of that particular barb.
And I'm just going to sit back and watch. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to make popcorn ahead of recording.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Speaking of popcorn, I love your Instagram photos.
Okay, just for you, I'm going to make a point to do a popcorn Instagram photo.
All right, that's good. That's good. Yeah. That's good. And you were, where can we find you on Instagram?
You can find me at Jay Gamut.
What kind of stuff do you post?
Lately I've been posting fun photos of what I'm seeing outside, like when I'm walking around on the Pearl Street Mall in Boulder, or like when we were all together in Breckenridge for TMO writers meeting, and then I post other fun things too.
That you do. And you're a very good photographer and you've got a good eye.
Well, thank you.
I absolutely recommend it. Now, my account, on the other hand, which is at Geek Tells, that's GEEKTELLS, Geek Tells, is I'm just as bad at Instagram as I am at all other forms of social media, meaning that I go in bursts.
Yeah, but you're a good photographer.
Thank
so
you.
So there's that.
I do have a pretty good eye. And I do occasionally post some. Post some images. I also posted a couple images from Colorado.
Yeah, you had some nice photos. It was really, I enjoyed seeing those.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. So you can check us out there on Instagram. That's Geek Tells for me and Jay Gamut for Jeff. Good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Shall we talk about fat ass?
Yes. And it's just the pants that I'm not wearing.
No, it's right not now. You. It's a rapper. It's Prince Harvey.
Oh, right.
Prince Harvey. He is a rapper out of Brooklyn. And he recorded an album at an Apple store and not with permission, per se.
That's awesome. So what? He just went in and set up his own computer and a microphone and started recording?
No, he was using Apple's computers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you like how I set that up?
I did. It was if you didn't know. It was quite funny. He used Apple's computers to... So what he does is a subset of rap called acapella rap. At least that's how SoundCloud identifies it. And
okay.
So he records all the backing tracks himself, you know, with obviously using his throat and mouth to make noises.
Mm-hmm.
And he recorded the whole album on, I'm assuming with GarageBand, on Apple's machines. He went in there for hours every day for 4 months. And he had two sympathetic employees that basically sort of assisted him. He wouldn't name them because he didn't want them to get fired. Although I'm sure at this point Apple could actually figure out who they are.
Yeah.
And... and he released this album. And so what Fat Ass, it's PHATASS. That's the name of his album. And that stands for Prince Harvey at the Apple Store, Soho.
That's very clever. I think that's a really fun name. And especially knowing that it's an acronym and what it stands for. That's really clever.
It's really clever in a number of ways because, you know, it incorporates his name and it incorporates fat, which is a term that comes from the hip-hop community. It incorporates where he recorded it, which is the Apple Store. And, of course, it is it has the other nomenclature that goes with it, which is fat ass, which is funny.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very clever. And it's also going to end up getting him attention because he got a story from the Daily Beast. They're the ones who first covered this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's got him lots of attention. And I really admire the chutzpah it took to get this done. And the reason why he did this, by the way, it wasn't just a publicity stunt. He had one of his Mac laptops break, and the other one was stolen.
Oh.
Yeah. And he's a young man. He's from the Dominican Republic. At least I think that's where he's from. And he lives in Brooklyn. He was in the process of getting evicted from a flat he shared with 19 other people.
Man.
So, you know, he didn't have a lot of money. As you know, New York City is an expensive place to live. So he couldn't just go out and buy another Mac so he could get his album recorded. And he was very driven to get this album done and recorded and released. And he did what it took to do it.
That's actually really cool.
It is really cool.
I mean, the story behind why he had to do it really sucks. But the fact that he's like, all right, I need to make this happen. And here's how I can do it. So I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And so he would email himself files. He would put files sometimes on a...
like a flash drive or something.
A flash drive. And one time he said there was a fire drill while he was saving. And an Apple Store employee came over to his machine and yanked his flash drive out before it finished saving.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. It's kind of understandable. I'm not going to make that person into the bad guy.
No, they're not the bad guy. They were just doing what they needed to do. It just sucks.
Right. And then he also figured out that if he would put files in the trash, they wouldn't get reset when the machines were reset every night. Apparently, the trash at that point wasn't emptied.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. That's surprising, but there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I would assume, I mean, that's actually something that seems like Apple should actually fix, but whatever. Because, I mean, Apple does reset those machines every night. So that way, everyone who's coming in to an Apple store, they're always going to be greeted by the machines that are exactly where Apple wants them to be. And that's, of course, something that Apple actually pays attention to. You know,
yes, apparently, except for the trash.
Except for the trash. And, you know, that was actually pretty clever.
Yeah, that's very clever.
So, yeah. So anyway, I like the whole story. I listened to a couple of the tracks. It's good stuff. Not my favorite thing that I've ever listened to, but definitely not bad either.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, this guy ends up being able to have a bit of a career with us.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I'm wondering how long it will be before we hear some of his tracks showing up on Beats One.
Yeah, or just even on Apple Music per se, to be able to stream it in iTunes.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be cool.
Have you been listening to Beats One?
I have.
And?
And some of the shows I'm just kind of meh about, but that's only because some of the music that they're playing hasn't been that compelling to me. But overall, I'm enjoying what feels like a big throwback to the glory days of radio.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And there would actually be a problem if you liked every show. Because, I mean, Apple shouldn't be tailoring Beats. I mean, Apple shouldn't be tailoring Beats One to any one person. Right, I mean,
right.
They should have different shows, and I'm pleased that they have. What I was worried about is that it was going to be just a crappy pop station, and it's not just a crappy pop station. They're definitely playing different styles of music.
Yeah, that's true, and that's what's making me happy. I love that there's a lot of diversity, so there's something for nearly everyone.
Right. Have you heard any country?
No, I have not.
No, that's interesting. Have you heard any like classical?
Not yet.
How about jazz?
I've heard some jazz-ish stuff, but not jazz, like straight on jazz.
Like
I kind of hope that they start adding in some of that. You know, maybe this is going to be stuff for like Beats 2 and Beats 3.
You know, that's a really good point. beats one. That's a really good point that I just honestly hadn't considered. Because I took Beats 1 to be a playoff the BBC one, which is where Zane Lowe is from.
Sure, I could see that.
And so I just kind of thought, you know, it's like, well, they're copying something that is in fact known throughout the world. So they're going to call it Beats 1. That, you know, that's interesting. But there certainly could, if this ends up becoming popular, they could absolutely do Beats 2, Beats 3, Beats 4, etc.
Yeah, my assumption when I first saw the Beats 1 thing was that, okay, this is the first channel, and we're going to get some others later on. But now that you spin it to me as the play on BBC Radio 1, yep, I can see that too.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. I think that people don't like the Apple Music interface, especially on the iOS app.
Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot.
But I think that they're liking Beats 1, and I think that they're liking the service.
Yeah, I think by and large people are really liking it, which is cool.
All right, well, we have time for one last topic, but that's only if we don't spend too much time dilly-dallying.
All right. What would you like to talk about then?
Well, you want to look at the iBooks antitrust appeal?
Sure. That's something we've both been following for quite a while now.
Yep. Apple lost.
Yes. The appeals court in a split decision decided that Apple did in fact orchestrate a conspiracy to price fix books, and that they were wrong to do so.
Yeah, technically, the conviction wasn't overturned, and the monetary damages that were part of that original case in front of Judge Coate was upheld.
Right, which is not at all what Apple wanted to see happen in this case.
No, and Apple also was not able to free itself from Michael Brom, which it's a court-appointed monitor.
Which sucks for Apple, too, because this is not something that they ever agreed to. It was forced on them, and it's been an adversarial relationship.
Right. And it's interesting. There's a lot of stuff that's pretty interesting to me in this to me. One is that Apple lost because it seemed like from the way questions were going in the appeals process that the judges were finding fault with the case against Apple. It seemed that way.
You know, this is something we've seen before. During the original trial, there was a lot of stuff happening that looked like it showed that Apple did no wrong.
Yeah, well, yeah, looking at all, yeah. We've talked a lot about that, of course. Yes. Now, this was a split decision. So you had two judges basically saying that Apple clearly conspired to fix prices and that this is a bad thing, the end. And then you had the dissenting opinion I'll just say it like this, agreed with me and you.
It's nice to have that validation to know that we were right, even though we were overruled.
Well, it's our outvoted in this case, but it's nice knowing that someone who actually knows something about the law, more or less took the same opinion that we did. And so, let's see, what was this guy's name? It was Judge Dennis Jacobs. He wrote a 38-page dissenting opinion, and he had three very salient points. Now, the third of which I'm going to quote from. Apple's conduct assessed under the rule of reason on the horizontal plane of retail competition was unambiguously and overwhelmingly pro-competitive. Apple was a major potential competitor in a market dominated by a 90% monopoly, that's Amazon, and was justifiably unwilling to enter a market on terms that would assure a loss on sales or exact a toll on its reputation. In that connection, the district court erroneously deemed the monopolist's $9.99 price as categorically good for competition because it was lower than cost and because ebook prices rose after the monopoly was broken. So what he's saying is that price is not the only way to define competition.
Yes.
That there was no competition because there was none.
Right.
And that Apple was entitled to be able to create the terms that it needed to enter the market. Now, in the majority opinion, the judge who wrote that specifically said that Judge Jacobs was just wrong, and that essentially the conspiracy to fix prices is it, that's it. That's all antitrust law is concerned about. The end.
Which is not how I interpreted that. However, people will point out that I don't have a license to practice law, which is ridiculous considering I have played an attorney.
Exactly. And because I know you, I think that makes me qualified to have opinions on this stuff too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. The whole thing is interesting. It is so weird to me that price is the only thing. Of course, you know, what the majority judges, the majority opinion, it was two to one, by the way. So this was a three judge panel. I believe that Apple could actually ask the full 9-judge panel or 7-judge panel. I forget what the Second Circuit has, but they could ask the full court to hear it. That's one option, or they could go straight to the Supreme Court from here.
I'm wondering if their next stop will be the Supreme Court, because it's pretty clear Apple is not going to give up on this.
It is clear that Apple is not going to give up. We'll have to see which direction they go. The fact that it was a split decision, as I understand it, should make it at least a little easier for Apple to engage in an appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I believe so.
I'm not positive on that because, again, not an attorney at all. But and it was very interesting to see the things that you and I wrote about. I guess I probably wrote a lot more about it, but things that you and I talked about a lot. It was interesting to see those thoughts mirrored in this dissenting opinion. I don't see how it's good. I don't see how it's good for the market to be controlled by a monopolist who's dumping product. I don't see how that's good. I don't see how that's good for consumers, not in the long run.
I don't see how that's good either. But it looks to me like a lot of the decision has been based on the near term, meaning our customers getting a better price today, regardless of why they're getting a better price. And just because they're getting a better price today with in this case, Amazon controlling the market, that doesn't mean that they get to continue having better prices.
Well, it's not like Amazon has any interest in making any money. So, I mean, you know, to the majority opinion's unstated point, Amazon has never made money.
Which is crazy, considering how much we all buy from them.
They've made a tiny bit of money, but I mean, they've made so little money compared to the revenue. It's, I don't know. We talked a lot about that in the past.
Yeah, we have, and it looks like for now, Amazon gets to continue having their unfettered monopoly. And
well, Amazon still has not gotten back the 90% share that it had.
No, but it still is the dominant player.
It is, yeah, very much. Kindle dominates ebooks for sure. Apple has not pushed iBooks. I'd like to see iBooks marketed. You want to talk about marketing? I want to see iBooks marketed.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about that. We really don't see any iBooks marketing at all.
And as much as I have a love-hate relationship with self-published books, if you're a self-published author, my apologies, but most self-published authors need professional editing help. They do. But I see what Amazon has done in the world of self-publishing as a good thing on the whole.
Sure. As an extreme example, if it wasn't for self-publishing, we wouldn't have The Martian.
Yeah, there's all kinds of good books that have gone through. You know, the problem is you have to wade through mountains of crap to get to them. But okay, that's beside the point. That's a total digression. My point is, I wish Apple would embrace and extend self-publishing through iBooks, and I wish Apple would outdo Amazon on that. I wish Apple would make it easy to self-publish books.
That would be really cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah, it would be a good thing. There's a lot of stuff Apple could do with iBooks. Of course, right now its hands are tied, in part because of its quad-pointed monitor, and in part because it has, there's a lot that it can't do for a period of, I think, 5 years as part of its conviction. So,
right,
you know, and but I mean, I don't know. We are so at the end of our time. Now, listen, let me add one more thing.
Okay.
I have this cold. I've been coughing. My intention is to take them all out. You have been doing a marvelous job of talking when I started coughing and trying to help me cover this up. If I didn't succeed in pulling them all out, dear listeners, I do apologize.
I just want to point out, Brian, that you are such a trooper, because here you are with this nasty, nasty chest cold, and you have soldiered forward through the entire show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
A lesser man would have said, I'm too sick and I can't record. And that's not what you did.
Thank you.
You're more like, oh, I can do it.
So what are we going to do when I go on vacation? We have to talk about that. Let's talk about that offline, though.
All right.
Let's go out.
Okay. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Let's see here. That's where I say something about our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is recorded by Boom, just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, Brian, you get better. And listeners, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer, unless you see us first.
You'll know we're coming because you hear Brian coughing.